The subject of our consideration is the cause of human suffering and sorrow. Mr. Judge wrote to one of his students, I quote, "It is a contest of smiles if we really know our own business." Mr. Judge, a proficient in the science of life and past master in the art of right living, by precept and by personal example of his own life, how every one of us can make our life meaningful, purposeful, peaceful and sublime, irrespective of what conditions surround us, whether favorable or unfavorable. One important truth that he emphasizes is that it is not the circumstances of life which cause us pain, sorrow and suffering, as our view of life and our attitude to life. We could give examples. We see in the world, in our own experience, we have seen numerous instances of people who, having faced adversities in life, who having met what people call misfortune, are demoralized and they resort to blaming others and resort to escapist means of overcoming their difficulties. The difficulties bring about all the negative qualities in them. This one set of people we have seen, and some even take to extreme measures of injuring themselves, hurting themselves and their families. This is how they face the adversities of life. There are others we have seen, every one of us have seen, that when adversities meet them in life, they face it with courage, with confidence, cheerfulness, and the very fact of facing the difficulties bring about resourcefulness in them to deal with the situation, and they even triumph over the difficulties. In one case, the difficult circumstances, difficulties in life demoralizes the person and he is thrown off balance. In the other case, similar circumstances bring about the best qualities in him. Now, there is a third kind of reaction to difficulties in life, and they are not very common. You see them rarely. They have a capacity to withstand any adversity, sorrow, suffering, mental, emotional, physical. That stoical indifference to their own sorrows, and at the same time engage in active philanthropic work and never waver from their chosen life's ideal. We have seen all these three kinds of reactions to adversities in life. Now, what does this show? What lesson does this observation of life tell us? Is it not obvious that our pain and sorrow are not so much in the circumstances of life, but it is our view and our attitude? This is very plain. Now, Mr. Judge emphasizes this particular point. It is an axiom of life. It is a basic axiom of life. Let's understand it and register in our mind and soul. This will be great help in meeting our life situation. He says, I quote, "The power of any and all circumstances is a fixed and unvarying quality. But as we vary in our perception of these, it appears to us that our difficulties vary in intensity. They do not vary at all. We are the variance." This is the truth that we must take to heart, meditate upon, and realize it in life. See the truth of it. Realize the truth, the great truth of it in, of this in our lives. Which goes to show, pain, sorrow and suffering are relative to the individual. It is not the object that causes us so much pain and sorrow, as our attitude and view and our reaction, our understanding of life, how we meet situations in life. It is purely subjective and relative. Be that as it may, the subject of our consideration, as already said, is what is the cause of our pains and sorrows. Now, everyone who has undergone severe tests and trials in life, pains and sorrows through loss, through separation, and so on and so forth, suffer and ask, why this pain and sorrow, why this affliction has come to me? Mind you, those who are happily circumstanced in life never ask this question. Very few who are very happily circumstanced in life ask, why am I so happily circumstanced? They take it for granted. You know, those who believe in God say, oh God, why did you give me this pain and sorrow? But those who are happily circumstanced do not say, oh God, why did you give me this pleasure and happiness? They have never asked that. They take it for granted. And which only goes to show, this situation in life goes to show that happiness, pleasure, good as they are, seldom teach us any lessons. It is only the pain and sorrow which drives man to search for the cause of pain and sorrow. Which means that it is only which drives man to search for truth, and it is by that means that he progresses. To say that, repeat the theological dogma, it is the will of God that he must suffer, and it is the will of God that others must have happiness, is no explanation at all. No thinking, reasonable person will ever accept such an absurd dogma. If God were so favoring some and not favoring others without any reason, according to his will, which is inscrutable, as theologians say, then such a God would be worse than even an ordinary person on earth. So such a God would never invoke any respect from us. And moreover, there cannot be any such God at all. So for all these difficulties, enigmas, paradoxes in life, there must be a just, reasonable and philosophically consistent explanation. That can be done, that can be found only in the ancient science of life, which not be confused with modern science. Modern science is no science at all. When we say ancient science, it is a true science which takes into account the totality, the whole, sum total of spiritual, psychological, physical, intellectual, moral, all this is taken into consideration. Modern science is no science. It only misleads, because holding to just physical and considering that as a be-all and end-all, it leads you into confusion. It leads you into negation. It leads you into denial. What denial? Soul denial. Denial of truth. Denial that there is any truth in life. It leads man on the downward course. So you must go to the ancient science to find consistent, reasonable, philosophic, just explanation of the problems of life. Now, the question can be considered under various perspectives. When we view life from the perspective of the ancient science of psychology and spiritual psychology, what do we find? It is obvious to everyone that what we call life, nature, universe is pervaded by duality. We call it dvandva. Dvandva means opposites, pairs of opposites. Is not life made of pairs of opposites, of pleasure and pain, sorrow and happiness, good and evil, light and darkness, waking and sleeping, centripetal and centrifugal force, positive energies and negative energies, lower and the higher, virtue and vice, despotism and freedom. You find life is pervaded by duality. And it is this duality of life which we face. And mind you, they are inseparable pair. Can light be separated from darkness? How can you separate life from darkness? Light from darkness. If there were no darkness, how would we know light? We would not be cognizant of life at all, light at all. If there were no death, would we ever know what life is? It is only by the contrast of death that we know life. It is only by contrast of darkness that we know light. It is only by contrast of cold that we appreciate the warmth of sun. It is only by contrast of vice and wickedness that we know the value of virtue. So you see, life is pervaded by duality, and this duality is inseparable pairs. So when we meet life, we meet with pairs of opposites. So what is our tendency? Our tendency is to go for pleasures. Our tendency is to go for happiness. Who doesn't go for happiness? Even animal kingdom, insects, a cockroach strives for its own happiness. Every human being strives for his happiness. But then the point is, happiness cannot be had without its opposite, sorrow. When we go for happiness and pleasure, it's necessary concomitant follows, sorrow and pain. It cannot be separate. So blended are these two opposites that there is pain in happiness and pleasure, and there is pleasure and happiness in sorrow. They're so interblended, which goes to show that these two pairs have a higher unity in which they become resolved. These are the obvious observations of life that we all can make. So let's remember that nobody has plunged us into this life. We chose to plunge ourselves into this life. Take for example, instinct of self-preservation. If any danger to our life comes, we defend ourselves. So life is very dear to us. Why are we born here in this circumstance? Because we sought it. We wanted life. We plunged into the life. And having plunged into the life, we are seeking for happiness. And when we seek for happiness, pain and sorrow inevitably follows. So the trouble comes when we don't recognize this truth. The happily circumstance, everything is now going well in life. Somewhere comes from behind and the despair touches from behind on our shoulders and we are enveloped in sorrow. So you see that inseparable pair, and this is the cause of pain. And let's consider another very important point. Life is change. There is nothing, even for one fraction of a moment, anything from atom to the sun or the galaxy remains the same for one moment of not even fraction of a moment. Everything is changing to become something else. Change, time and change. Time, change is the time and change are part and parcel of our manifested life. Nothing remains constant even for one fraction of a moment. Everything changes to become something else. We were infants, we changed and became children, from children, adults, from adults, middle age, from middle age, old age with decrepitude, pain, death. Is it the end? How can it be the end? It cannot end. Law of conservation of energy and the principle of continuity. So, the opposite of death is birth. Birth follows. Why birth follows? We seek life. We die. But will our desires die? No. Our desire is so powerful. It is an unconscious creative force. The very desire to live plunges us back into another life. And we repeat this oscillation between the pairs of opposites of pleasure and pain, happiness and sorrow. And this change, change for what purpose? It's progression. There's a constant progression. And this progression takes place in cycles. It is not a linear progression. It is a cyclic progression. You observe life and see the cyclic progression. There is an evolution. So, from state of one condition, we can't remain in any one condition for any considerable time. We have to change to another type of conditions because progress. And progress involves learning, experiencing, learning. So life is full of experiences, and experiences teaches lessons, and as we learn the lessons, then we progress. And there is a great goal and a destiny which is beckoning us to higher and higher. So answering that call, answering that impulse, we are going through these changes, progressive changes, a transition from one state to another state. So you see here that it this transition state is always painful. When we are in one set of conditions, then time comes for change to another type of conditions. Then this transition is difficult for us because we get so used to one particular set of conditions. When we change comes, then giving up that which we, you know, were clinging to a newer condition is always painful to us. Now, look at what Buddha says, how true it is. Right from the time we are born throughout life till we die, this is painful change goes on. See, ache of birth, ache of helpless days, ache of hot youth, ache of manhood's prime, ache of chill grey years and choking death, these fill your piteous time. Sweet is fond love, but funeral flames must kiss the breasts which pillow and lips which cling. Gallant is warlike might, But vultures pick and pick the joints of chief and king. So this is how the life goes. And why do we cling to life in spite of all this? Oh, life is painful, I would like to go to Nirvana. Can you go? No, you would not. Because thirst for life, you thirst for life. You know, that it is a fire which burns in us. No, Buddha calls it the flame of Krishna. Krishna is thirst for life. We seek life. Why complain? Who compels us to suffer, to pain and enjoy? Nobody is compelling us. We chose. So accept responsibility. Understand, it is our own intense desire which brought us into life to enjoy and suffer. And if you don't learn lessons, then it becomes just ceaseless oscillation between these pairs of opposites till the end of the world. Unless we learn the lessons of life. So flameth Krishna, lust and thirst of things. They like to have things, they like to have luxuries, they like to acquire things. Thirst of things. Eager you cleave to shadows, dote on dreams. Oh, I dream that, dream this career, that I'm going to achieve. Dote on dreams. A false self in the midst you plant and make the world around which only seems, blind to the highest beyond, deaf to the sound of sweet air breathed from afar past Indra's sky, dumb to the summons of the true life kept for him who falls puts by. So we must meditate on this great themes, spiritual psychology. Otherwise your life becomes useless. Therefore, it is desire which perpetuates attachment. This attachment. When change and progression takes place, the attachment clinging will bring pain. But if you recognize that change is inevitable and this false life comes from our delusion that this is real and permanent, to seek the permanence in the things ever impermanent and changing and transitory is a source of sorrow. And we recognize that a keen, a sting is, you know, which causes the deepest pain is removed from our life, if you recognize this. And move with the changing times, with the, as beautifully put here, we have a higher ideal and a higher destiny. Ever fix your sight on that and move on, higher and higher progress. So, to seek permanent satisfaction in things inherently transitory is a source of pain and sorrow. So, what are the lessons learned? Pain and sorrow are concomitants of life. You cannot escape them, no matter what you do, no matter what yajnas and homas you do, what temples you go and offer, whatever you want to your favorite deity, pain and sorrow will never leave you. Why? It is necessity. It is only through pain and sorrow that we learn. So, pain and sorrow are the teachers. Pleasures and happiness are like pools of cool water body in the desert of life. Now and then we meet them, and in our long journey, it is a place where we rest and cool our limbs and take rest and move on, and this onward journey is full of pain and sorrow. Therefore, you must learn the important lesson that there is a purpose in life, and this pairs of opposites of pain, sorrow, light and darkness, heat and cold, virtue and vice, centripetal and centrifugal force, which keeps the universe alive and going and moving, has a higher unity in which this pairs of opposites gets resolved into a higher unity. And that is the true life. That is the true life which beckons us, as beautifully put by Buddha. He says, the summons of the true life kept. We are deaf to the summons of the true life. This is a false life to which we cling. But this experience of life through pain and sorrow will awaken us, awaken the soul to the true life. And it's only this search. That's why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, four kinds of people worship me, he says. One, the first kind is those who are afflicted. It's only those who are afflicted search for truth. So this affliction makes us search for truth, and it makes for progress. And this will, through a long, long experience in life, very seriously, and through accumulation of essence of experiences through number of incarnations, with growth of wisdom and experience, ultimately we seek the true life as contrasted with the false life that we have been clinging to. And Buddha says, dumb to the summons of the true life kept for him who false puts by. So that is the purpose we are here for. So it is this shrine, this body is a shrine of sensation, voice of the silence say, it is a shrine of sensation. And the ancient science says that this is not your true self, this is not your true being, this is a chariot of sensation. This chariot of sensation has senses as the horses and emotion as the mind. And we are not this chariot. We are a passengers in this chariot. As Buddha says, a painted ornate chariot. We decorate it and we think we are the chariot. So when we reins are, you know, the reins are held by emotional self, and that is the disaster. That is the disaster that we are facing. When we live only by our desires, likes and dislikes, and as if this life is the be all and end all, we have handed over the reins of our chariot, whose senses are the horses, and the object of the senses is the field in which they run, as Upanishad say. Then we have given the reins to one who will plunge us into a series of accidents and ultimate disaster. So the reins must be given over to, as Arjuna did, to Krishna, who is our higher self. There is a divine intellect in us which knows, discriminate between what is real and what is unreal, what is true and what is false, what makes for freedom, true freedom, and what makes for bondage and misery. There is that guide in us. To that guide, inner guide, the inner ruler, the divinity within us, our divine conscience, that should be the guide in our life. So we must seek for wisdom. So there are two ways open to us. One way of going through life and learning the lessons of life is the hard way. And majority of the people choose the hard task master of life. They get repeated beatings. And that is the path they have chosen. No lessons are learned. But there are others who learn the lessons of life and takes to heart the counsel of the wise ones and incorporate them in life, study them, meditate on them, incorporate them in their life and make quick progress. This is called race to immortality. Race to immortality. Look how beautifully this is stated here. When nature evolves human embryo, the intention is that a man shall be perfected physically, intellectually and spiritually. That is the aim for which we are here. His body is to grow, mature, wear out and die. His mind unfold, ripen and be harmoniously balanced. His divine spirit illuminate and blend easily with the inner man. No human being completes its grand cycle or the circle of necessity until all these are accomplished. As the laggards in a race struggle and plod in their first quarter, while the victor dart past the goal, so in the race of immortality, some souls outspeed all the rest and reach the end, while their myriad competitors are toiling under the load of matter close to the starting point. So, who chooses? We who choose. So we better learn and choose aright. Light of the Path, a beautiful book, devotional book, which gives an excellent exposition of the laws of higher life. And it says, all you who want to tread this path of higher life, learn this laws of higher life. Otherwise the womb of time will close before you and you will remain helpless, powerless. What does it mean? It is only in this body, in this life, that we can learn. When we die in the gold subjective state, no learning is possible, only assimilation of what we have learned. When this stream of evolutionary stream called earth life ends, at the end of the life cycle, all those who have not reached the goal, have not completed the course in life, they will have to remain in the womb of time till the next great evolutionary stream goes forth. For incalculable ages they remain powerless. That's why even gods aspire to become men, because it is only man that a perfect balance between spirit and matter is accomplished. Even the gods, that is, those who have gone far ahead of human kingdom, even if they have to make further progress, they have to incarnate. That is a precious human life. So, womb of time will close before you, attend you to these rules. Very important truths are to be understood by us. Universal brotherhood. There is one life and myriads of life are different expressions of it. And myriads of life are unfolding that potentiality of that one life. And we are born along in that life, far above the lower kingdoms of nature. As those who have gone far before us, in the prior period, suprahuman stages of evolution, Dhyani Buddhas and Dhyani Bodhisattvas, there is evolutionary progress, and this is guided by the laws of karma and reincarnation. These laws have to be learned, and your whole life shaped and molded and guided in that, on the lines of these great truths, ever keeping the great ideal of life in view. The tragedy of this modern civilization is it has no world ideal. A civilization which has no such world ideal which has mere material luxury as its main aim, will reach its end, and what will be left behind is a heap of ashes, and nothing is left. And the future civilizations will not even know that such a civilization flourished. And if they know at all historically, it is one of the useless nations that perished, yielding no spiritual fruit. So if you learn these truths, life, as Mr. Judge says, could be sublime, useful, peaceful. It is a contest of smiles if you know our own business, as he says. So therefore we must know for what purpose we are here. Swadharma. What is our duty in life? The voice of the silence says that we are here for a purpose. We have an appointed work in life. Do we know what our appointed work in life is? It is not mere going to the school, getting a degree, which is a license for a job, making a career, earning money in wealth. There is, okay, but that is not our appointed work in life. We as souls have come for a purpose. And when we are plunged in this life, we forget what the purpose is. So we have an appointed work in life. And the first duty is to know what our Swadharma is. The whole tragedy of life is we don't know our Swadharma. We don't know for what purpose we are here. For what purpose we are here. There is one common general rule applicable to all. We are here to make our life, mind, body, heart, purify them and make our whole life and our brain and our system, our whole personal self vibrate in unison with our divine consciousness, higher self. Make it our whole life, mortal life, harmonize with the light, with the vibrations of the higher life, and make the light of the higher self in such that the light of the higher self shines through us, illuminate the mind, illuminate the heart. It is not easily done, but that is the purpose for which we all are here, and each individual has a particular way of doing it, and that is Swadharma. His own karma determines it, and he has to discover that. Therefore, everyone is for that purpose. Now, truth, non-violence, love, forgiveness, these are the virtues that we have to cultivate. Forgiveness is the gratitude, forgiveness, unconditional love. As Jesus says, if you love those who love you, what is it that you have done more than the Pharisees? Love those who hate you, love those who are inimical to you, then you have done something worthwhile. Why? They're based on law of life. As Desmond Tutu, who presided over the Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, which after the freedom laid the foundation of the new South African Republic on the foundation of unrevengefulness and forgiveness. One of the greatest examples in the world's history, next to India, which won its freedom through non-violence. South Africa did it. Reconciliation, forgiveness, the firm foundation. Look at the other terrible wars fought, and then how do they react to it? Get all those people who committed crimes in the war and established war crime courts, hang them. That's another way of doing it. The latter will lead to more disasters. The former brings about a growth, gradually ends this negative emotion of hatred and violence. You build on that. So if you hear, what the purpose? Now, in our daily life, there is some very important lessons that we can, we have to learn. See, doing our own duty and not meddling in the duties of others. One of the worst things, it looks very strange that this should be considered as one of the worst sins on our part. But nevertheless, it is true if you understand the psychology to if you understand the occult dynamics of life, our inner life. We criticize and condemn other people. One of the worst sins that you can ever do. What do you know about another person? Nothing. The sum total of the being is hid from you. You see only a passing momentary glimpse of sum total. When you judge a person, when you criticize and condemn a person, you are violating the universal law of justice and you incur a terrible karmic demerit which brings you suffering. Look, when you condemn another person, criticize, there is an implicit assumption that you are free from it. You are not free from it. Search your heart, you will find contamination. That breeds hypocrisy. That vitiates and poisons your own soul. And you go down. That's why Krishna warns, attend to your own duty. The duty of another is full of danger. This is the danger. And look what Mr. Judge says. Let's consider this, one or two important points, another 5 minutes. Accumulate a fund of goodwill. Have goodwill to all, ill will towards none, even to those who do you harm. Look, if someone does me harm and I retaliate, in what way am I better than him? I am no better than him. If someone injures me, I retaliate, I am no better than him. If one wrong is done, should I compound that wrong by my retaliation, doing the same kind of violence? So, what is the guide in this? Accumulate a fund of goodwill for all others and we will dissipate many clouds from our life. We can make our life sublime. The follies and the so-called sins are really things that are sure to come to nothing if you treat them right. No, if you take these wise counsels and apply in your family life, in your professional life, among your friends, in society, in your relationship with people, it will make your life sublime. A contest of smiles, as he says. We must not be so prone as are the people of the day, of whom we are some, to criticize others and forget the beam in your own eyes. You look to the spot in another's eyes, you forget to see the beam in your own eyes. Invariably this is true and this will lead to sorrow. Why do you make your life miserable? And then Bhagavad Gita and the Jesus are right in that they both show to do our own duty and not go to that of others. So wise counsel, when you see some wrong done, and your impulses to criticize. Ask two questions to yourself. First question, am I the judge in this matter who is entitled to try this person? Answer yourself. Second question you must ask, am I any better in my way? Do I offend in some other way just as much as they do in this? No, that should be the question. So this is doing our own duty. This will settle the matter, I think. And there ought to be no judgment, no criticism. If some offend, then let us ask this question. If the offense is against me alone, forget it, forgive him. Why? It is my swadharma to forgive, not retaliate. If the offense is against a whole community, then I must do my duty. My duty is to see that others are not hurt by an offense of someone. I must do what my duty is and do it. So these are excellent guides in life. So as already said, Mr. Judge was a past master in the art of right living. And if you take his counsel, there cannot be any higher and a better teacher than you in this great voyage of life. And then let's see another very important truth. You must take it to heart and ever remember this. Often we find that we are troubled, we are unhappy, deep pain and sorrow comes apparently for no reason, disappointment, despair. The reason is, it is a reaction from our being unkind to someone, no matter when, how long back. So, writing to one of his correspondents, Mr. Judge wrote, "Have you had any ill feeling towards," he was writing to one particular person, "him? If so, ought you not at once drive them out of your hearts? For I swear to you," says Mr. Judge, "I swear to you on my life, that if you have been troubled or unfortunate, it is by the reaction from such or similar thoughts about him or others. Drive them all out of your hearts and present such kindliness and brotherliness to him that he shall, by the force of your loving kindness, be drawn into full unity and cooperation with you, transforming the apparent adversity into sublimity, art of living. Discussions are proofs to show that you are right and he is wrong. All that is does no help. We are none of us ever be in the right. We are none of us ever in the right. There is always that in us that causes another to offend. Remember that. And finally, let's remember another important truth. The very best I can say to you, says Mr. Judge, is that, as you know, all our troubles in life arise from ourselves. No matter how much they may seem to come from outside, we are all parts of the one great whole. And if you try to center your mind upon that fact and remember that those things that seem to trouble you are really due to your own way of looking at the world and life, you will probably grow more contented in mind. It is your own mind that you must watch and not the circumstances in which you are placed. So friends, let's close here and take up any questions that you may have.